Several years ago, I was at a seminar on church size transitions, and the well-known consultant in charge threw us something that we didn't expect. She didn't ask us, "What is your church's mission or vision statement?" Instead, she asked, "What is your congregation's song that most people would resonate with?" Basically, if you make a joyful noise, what would the song be? I really wrestled with that one. I was unfortunately the only person from our congregation attending that one. And I still do. It can be entertaining, though, to think of song titles. For a lot of us, a lot of the time, it could be, "How can I keep from singing?" And others might choose, "I am weary, let me rest." Or, how about respect? R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what that means to me. Our social action people, tirelessly trying to get more and more of us involved, could choose "We Shall Overcome," or they might bring in the old camp song that we used to sing when food was late coming in, "Here we sit like birds in the wilderness." Getting classical, so many of us might sing an Alleluia or the Ode to Joy. And on the other hand, there are times when I totally get the old 50s Homer and Jethro song, "I've got tears in my ears from lying on my bed on my back while I cry over you." It's happened. Most of us have known "You Are My Sunshine" moments, and also "I Am a Man of Constant Sorrow" once. I'm just curious if anybody here wants to shout really loudly any song that might come to your head. "Blue Boat Home." That's a great one. Do you notice something about our list of titles as we're trying to make our joyful noise? There appear to be a lot of apparent contradictions. There is fulfillment and there is frustration. There's joy and sorrow. There's hope and despair. Speaking for myself, our fellowship is the source of some of my highest, deepest, broadest joy, and it is the source of some of my most aching pain. We could say that church life is full of paradoxes, as is life in general. We Unitarian Universalists may have even more than other houses of worship. We come right out in unbroken line from the Christian tradition, but we are not a Christian denomination. We use the word church all the time in our lives, referring to this place and our activities here, and yet we have atheists aplenty. We are fiercely individualistic, and yet we work very hard to create community. In this congregation, we all subscribe to the proposition that we should be working for social justice, but as a group, we do not do as much as many churches do. I don't know if that's a paradox or just hypocrisy. It could be either. We are free of the creeds many faiths espouse, but our worship services at their best fill the very same needs as the services of creedal churches. Contradictory theologies and philosophies abound between and among individuals and groups. Now, this is not a new situation, especially for people who walk the hard road of liberal religion. Let me go back a little over a century to Green Acre, a noble religious community experiment that was started in 1894 by a visionary named Sarah Farmer. In idyllic rural Maine, the summer conferences were set forth for all people who declared and hopefully practiced, I'm quoting her now, a sincere attentiveness to, a commitment to spiritual openness and respectful engagement, and a sincere attentiveness to the presentation of alien perspectives. It was Emersonian and Whitman-esque, and it was full of Unitarians. Amazingly well-known people of the time came to Greenacre. John Burroughs, who was a successor to Henry David Thoreau as a nature writer, Felix Adler, founder of the Ethical Culture Society and the Free Religious Association, Swami Vivekananda, Professor William James of Harvard, best known for his varieties of religious experience. And their aspired to song might have been an early 20th century hymn that begins, "O Lord of life, thy kingdom is at hand." And yet, this fabulous sounding community foundered on the central paradox of liberal religion. Is freedom to explore the richness of many paths enough? Or is it shallow ultimately, and one has to engage with a tradition and practice and go deeply into it? Unfortunately for the experiment, the founder herself chose the second path and began following and devoting herself to the Baha'i faith. There was dissension and judgment, and the community ended in 1916 with Farmer's death. Unfortunately, their song during the last years might have been the 19th century hymn beginning, "I see the wrong that round me lies." Most people felt that way. Our own community of Boise UUs has had this very issue, I know. I read it in a comment of a new UU class person just yesterday. Some people find personal practice and devotional time that fulfills their need to explore deeply, including some who have attended Buddhist sanghas while remaining with us. Some people find they need to move on to the Congregational Church or Liberal Methodism or the Quakers or someone with a little more structure and or theology. Our foremothers and forefathers in this church, numerous of whom are still with us, and they aren't all that old, I make it sound ancestral, but they have faced a couple of really big identity paradoxes. This congregation was without a building for a long time, with an identity as a small, wandering group, marginal and somewhat beleaguered in this conservative place. When they decided to buy a building in the early 1970s, it was a step toward mainstream respectability out of that earlier identity and the ability to make more of a political and social difference. How to reconcile those two paradoxical views? Same thing with calling the first minister of this church in the early 80s. We UUs are extremely skeptical of authority in general. Look at our question authority bumper stickers, apparently advising ourselves to start any relationship with any authority in an atmosphere of mistrust. It was a hard decision calling Armida, that first minister. It was fraught with conflict. Keep full independence and responsibility for a lay-led congregation, or let a trained person take some of the responsibility and hand over a little of the autonomy and authority that is so important, that apparent contradiction of independence versus dependence. I find that if I look at church life as a pretty complex web of paradox, contradictions, resolutions, more seemingly irreconcilable contradictions, I get a better overview and I can do my work with a lighter heart. At the same time, paradox is pretty cold comfort. And that's where I find myself in the middle of this sermon this morning. This is the day that we begin the full-scale annual stewardship drive for our operating budget in a year when the economy is still struggling. a year in which we will have to lose some things very dear to us if we don't succeed in upping our pledge income by quite a bit. Bob and I did decide to. We actually increased it by 6%, and we are now giving something like 6% of our income. So my job this morning is to remind us all what a profoundly important spiritual, social, and justice-making place this is. I should add educational also. It is my job to recall to our hearts why the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship needs to be thriving here in this valley for us and for the larger community. Why we need programs and excited staff leadership and outreach into those places where compassion and justice may be in short supply. Is a little discourse on paradox enough to do this? Will that inspire us to make a joyful noise together with our time, talent, and treasure? Probably not. But here's the great thing about paradox. Paradox means that something is apparently contradictory, but is actually true, because there's a larger truth above it. I used to introduce that concept to my high school English students early on in vocabulary work, because I thought it was so important, and I would always say, how about the fact that we are living and dying at the same time? Liberal religion, with its central and subsidiary paradoxes, has concepts and practices that can, in fact, transcend our apparent contradictions. And the two practices that raise us above the paradoxes are reverence and connection. Reverence connects us with mystery. Reverence transcends belief systems, cuts across cultures and time. There's a man named Paul Woodruff who wrote a book on the subject, and he says, reverence begins in a deep understanding of human limitations. From this grows the capacity to be in awe of whatever we believe lies beyond our control. God, truth, justice, nature, death. The capacity for awe as it grows brings with it the capacity for respecting fellow human beings' flaws and all. And this in turn fosters the ability to be ashamed when we show moral flaws exceeding the normal human allotment. Reverence is how we can be truly spiritual, embracing all the differences in our theologies and philosophies. Reverence is why we are a religious community and not a social club. I am occasionally blinded with awe when I am praying in the grove and I feel the spirit of the trees, maybe even other presences. You may feel nothing under similar circumstances, but maybe you get those telltale goosebumps when you read a certain passage in a book by a person who combines head and heart in that genius way that a few people have. I stood dumbstruck last summer in front of the painting Nighthawks at the Chicago Art Institute. The essential loneliness of the human condition washing over me and moving me to tears. Painting may not move you, but perhaps those tears rise up in you when you hear the Messiah, or civil rights songs, or a perfect rendition of America the Beautiful. Some people climb mountains, we make love with our dear partners, we care for children, we work passionately toward justice, we garden. Awe can be found in many places and in no way depends on our belief system. If we cultivate our spirit of reverence, We move toward becoming a truly religious, Unitarian Universalist community, getting it that others have different paths, but that they, like us, honor what is beyond all human knowing and control. We then become more open-hearted, less judgmental, more forgiving of ourselves and others. And this is what religion is about at its best, right here. As Woodruff points out, true reverence leads us to that second paradox-transcending practice, which is connection. The root of the word religion means to bind, and that's what we are about. I'm sorry for smiling. I just have to make a digression. There is at least one person in this church who hates it when I do word origins, and he's in the room at the moment.
But I love it.
Okay. But the root of the word religion is, in fact, ligare, to bind. And there is a connection with mystery as we know it, and that connection grounds us in everything we do. There is a religious connection to the rest of the world. We bring, whenever we speak of ourselves as Unitarian Universalists, the saving message of an embracing faith to all who can hear. We send 25% of our morning offering to causes outside ourselves. We address hunger and we volunteer at the homeless sanctuary. And we hope to do more, much more, to become that beacon that we say we long to be. But we do, in fact, connect with the outside world and make a difference. And there is the connection with each other, what I am forever calling our surest indication of the divine. Here, at our best, we reach and are reached out to in genuine respect, affection, and if we are lucky, as I am, in love. Souls are nurtured here. This is the sort of place where connections lead a half dozen people to gather around the deathbed of an adored old person, loving her, praying her, willing her to go on to be with her beloved David. This is the sort of place where, when the unspeakable happens, like the death of a child, the community rallies simply to be with unappeasable sorrow. This is the sort of place where two wonderful people from our community invite us all to the Grove for feasting, music, and the celebration of their wedding vows. This is the kind of place where we can reenact our own version of Midsummer Night's Dream. We play together, eating and dancing and playing games, and we work together, even when it's really hard, like Deborah Smith's poem about the nursing mother. There is a love exists in toil. Where hands praise, the heart will follow. We work for our community. We give our generous pledge as much as we can, toiling toward the love that brings our hearts ease. And we help each other every day in those awful paradoxes of life, those apparent contradictions that we strive to live. There are paradoxes like, when we face our fear, we are given courage. When we support a sister or brother, our capacity to love ourselves increases. When we can accept our pain as part of life, we can realize greater happiness. When we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, we are graced with unforeseen strength. These are incredibly human, spiritual tasks. The support and challenge of our friends makes living them possible. Unitarian Universalism and this church in particular have so much to give if we praise with our hands and our heart and our substance. So, after this reflection, what do I think is our song? Today, I choose our second hymn, the one we just sang, There Are Numerous Strings. The lute of religious community is strung with many, many strings, each of us resonating differently. You may be a low C sharp and your neighbor a high D. Pretty paradoxical together. But the two have the makings with others of a most interesting chord. I might be a string that is held silent during the Christian chord, while yours resounds joyfully. One person may be the grounding tonic note in the atheist chord, while her closest friend's note is not heard in that one. That mid-range note, never blasting out to solo proportions, as the growly lowest bass or the soaring highest soprano strings do, is still a valued note, without which the music would be hollow. Each of us strings is independent and also falling far, far short of our whole potential if we do not join all the other different kinds of strings to make complex and beautiful music, to make a joyful noise together. When the chords are struck, reverent, strident, blasting, meditative, each of us contributes to making the music. Our hearts become one with the song, and we can indeed make joyful music together.